Hello and welcome to Get Jill, Get Chicken Bones. A common misconception amongst my peers is that I know a lot of stuff or that I have the answers to questions that span a whole cross-section of life as they shout, Get Jill! Full disclosure, people, I don't. In this series of podcasts, I'll be discussing topics surrounding the mind and the body that affect us modern souls. Hopefully coming out the other side, pulling up our big know-it-all pants just a little higher each time. Let's get to the chicken bones of it. Today we're going to talk about all things gut related. As the gut becomes one of the most talked about topics in biohacking, I want to find out the real deal with the gut, debunk some myths and separate the pseudoscience or social media science from the actual proven science. Today's guest is Jessica Pinnell of Humankind Nutrition. Jessica is not only a biomedical science graduate, but also a qualified nutritionist and health coach, with a special interest in the gut and female health. Jessica, welcome and thank you for being here. Firstly, if any conversation that I'm involved in with my family doesn't end up discussing your toilet habits, then quite frankly, it's not a conversation. There's so many questions I want to cover here because there are so many conditions that surround the gut. It seems the whole world is talking gut health. I mean, you've even managed your IBS and cured your asthma as a result of changing your diet. So the one thing we hear about most, I'm just going to dive right into, is the microbiome. In layman's terms, what is the microbiome? Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me here today. Well, obviously, the approach I might take to the subject might be slightly more scientific than your average nutritionist, just because of my background, obviously.
Yeah.
So research in this area has obviously been going on for a very long time. I remember when I was 15 years of age and I sat in the car with my mum, who was an ex-nurse, and she does a lot of her own research in her own time, reading up on the latest scientific papers, etc., that she started talking about the gut microbiome. And I was just like, you're crazy. This is all really woo-woo. And now, obviously, we've become very aware of it. So first of all, it's really important to define the gut microbiota. So the microbiota is all the organisms that live inside the human body, including bacteria, archaea, and fungi. And then the gut microbiome is the genetic material of all of these organisms. So the gut microbiome is the genetic material of all the microorganisms living in our gut.
Right.
Okay. Now we know that there are more bacterial and, microbial cells than there are human cells in the human body, which is super interesting. And these microbes are essential for processes such as breaking down milk, but they can become pathogenic when they're in the wrong places or they multiply. And some of them also are pathogenic anyway.
Ah, right. Okay, so we've got more microbial cells than our normal cells.
Mm-hmm.
That is amazing, eh?
It is.
God, so the first thing we tend to hear about when we think of our gut is pre and probiotics. Marketing people try to sell you them all the time. And I even believe in France, when they give a child antibiotics, they also prescribe them a probiotic, thus avoiding the effects of the medicine on the microbiome. Are these really that important? Do we need them? And can you explain the difference between them? So many questions there, but that's what we get punted all the time, isn't it, on media, pre and probiotics.
Definitely. Well, I kind of see these guys as the marvellous and magical foods that kind of reignite and re-establish our gut, really. So prebiotics are made of non-digestible dietary fibres that feed our gut bacteria and obviously aid in the health of our digestive system. We all hear about fibre and how important it is to hit the 30 grams recommended daily intake a day. Most of us aren't hitting this magical number. And in fact, the average in the UK is 18 grams. So we really need to try and up it.
That's why they're all saying, get your fibre in. I thought that was just for old people.
No.
But it's for everyone.
All adults need to be hitting the 30 grams a day to really aid in their digestive health. And fibre also helps, obviously, maintain blood sugar levels and it can lower cholesterol. So some of these foods that contain prebiotics include breast milk, chicory root, Jerusalem artichokes, garlic, leeks, onions, and asparagus.
All right.
Then we've got our little probiotics. These are the live microorganisms, which when consumed have beneficial properties. Products that contain these guys include tempeh, miso, pickled vegetables, kimchi, kefir, and buttermilk.
So you would, because you get sold these things pre-packaged, you would rather go down the food route of finding a pre and a probiotic?
Definitely. Yeah. As nutritionists, we always take a food-first approach.
Yeah.
We want people to get these products in as naturally as possible.
Yeah, from source.
Also, I thought it'd be important to just obviously touch on antibiotics because obviously there's such a craze about them at the moment.
Yeah.
These are products that target bacteria and help aid and cure infections. Recently, obviously, we've started to understand the long-term effects of antibiotics. I mean, broad-spectrum antibiotics can affect 30% of the abundance of our bacterial communities.
Right.
So obviously they can have an effect on our gut microbiota as well, which is probably why in France they're trying to counteract the effects of antibiotics with probiotics. However, the research is still underway and there is no solid evidence to suggest this is an effective approach.
Oh, really? Oh, that is so interesting, eh? Because I was thinking that would be a cure one for the other, but there's still no research there. So I wanted to chat about fermentation. When you hit up hashtag fermentation, you get over 1 million posts. Is this the panacea for anything gut-related? Or fermented foods, they must be eating fermented foods every day. Is this, I mean, is it brilliant? Are they brilliant?
Well, fermentation is actually a natural process carried out by our microbes, which involves breaking down foodstuffs, particularly carbohydrates, into short-chain fatty acids. The process also releases gases such as carbon dioxide, hydrogen.
Love a bit of gas.
Yeah, that methane, obviously, that we all know about.
Yeah.
Fermentable fibres more rapidly ferment in the foregut and mainly result in undesirable gastrointestinal effects that we probably all have experienced in our lives.
They do say you should fart 14 times a day, though.
Oh, my God, do they? Yeah. I haven't researched that part. But these short-chain fatty acids and other byproducts are involved in numerous physiological processes promoting health, such as stabilising blood glucose levels, stimulating gene expression and suppressing cholesterol synthesis.
Right.
So fermented foods, we've all heard about them.
Yeah.
They're the new craze, really. And these foods have undergone microbial fermentation. We've probably all heard of beer, wine, kefir, kimchi and sourdough.
Yeah.
That's like the new craze, isn't it, in the bread
world? Yeah, definitely. The sourdough and the kimchi. I mean, obviously, I'd take the beer and the wine over both of those.
So they have many health benefits, obviously. And we can kind of explain these health benefits by the production of bioactive peptides, vitamins, and other compounds that are produced by the microorganisms themselves involved in this fermentation process.
Yeah, so they really are good for you then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. So they help, even though your body does a bit of fermentation in the gut, they also help with mm-hmm. the extra fermentation. So I think of the gut as a little greenhouse, a wee mini Eden project. It's clear we should be tending to our little greenhouse, our little gardens. But what should we be tending to it with? I hear loads about polyphenols. What are polyphenols?
So polyphenols are micronutrients we get from certain plant-based products. They're actually defined by their structure. Research over the past 10 years has rapidly developed in this area. There is evidence that strongly supports that they play a role in degenerative diseases such as cardiovascular disease and cancer. They are the most abundant antioxidants in the diet. They're actually more abundant than vitamin C.
Wow.
They found to be 10 times more abundant. Obviously, we all know that antioxidants, well, maybe we all don't know. I just assume, being a nutritionist, that everyone knows that they play an essential role in protecting our DNA from damage by free radicals. So these amazing foods, products, sorry, can be found in wine, tea, vegetables, chocolate, one of our favourites,
yeah,
and cereal.
Is it dark chocolate or is it any chocolate?
Are we going mainly for the, dark chocolate, yeah, I think we have higher levels
of it. Hashtag healthy chocolate. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing, eh? So you can get them, again, all from foods. You basically, you can get the polyphenols all from...
Mainly plant foods.
Yeah, that's great. So that said, what should we be avoiding? I mean, let's not forget the gluten-free gang. If we can just take a moment's silence here for the bad reputation that normal white bread gets. Is gluten-free necessary if you're not a celiac? Are there any particular things, other items we should be avoiding apart from junk food, ready meals and all the other bad things? And also hear bad things about lectins, which I believe is the skin or the seeds that's come with plants as well. What should we be avoiding for optimal gut health?
I think it's just really important here to take an individualistic approach. This is how we treat people as nutritionists, obviously. There is no one-size-fits-all approach.
Right,
one person's
yeah.
food can be another person's poison. So obviously the whole gluten craze, we know it's important to avoid gluten if you are a celiac or obviously if you have some sort of intolerance to it, such as in my case. But there is no evidence that we need to avoid it otherwise. I feel like the gluten-free diet or the gluten-free craze, as it seems to be, I feel like it's died off a bit now. It kind of like dampens the importance on those with these actual medical conditions. And I just don't think that we should be labelling certain foods as bad. I mean, certain foods might affect some people and not affect others. But obviously it is really important in today's world to try to reduce our sugar intake because it's so readily available, to try and reduce the saturated fats and to obviously try and reduce the salt levels as well.
Yeah, for sure. Everything in moderation then. So you mentioned sugar there, and often it's criminal activities. Your body apparently doesn't differentiate between the sugar in a grape and the sugar in a Haribo. Is sugar really the devil? Are we all addicted to sugar? Is sugar bad for you?
So let's just take it back a little bit. We all know that sugar is a simple carbohydrate, so carbohydrates are therefore broken down into sugars. We really need sugar for energy. I just don't think that it's necessarily sugar that's the devil. It's more so how we choose to consume sugar. Obviously, I said before that it's more accessible. Back in the day when we were foraging, etc., we'd come by sugar, and the natural process to eat more sugar was beneficial to us because we didn't know when we were then going to find sugar again. But now, obviously, we tend to overconsume.
Yeah, and it gets hidden within other things that you don't even realise it's there.
Yeah, definitely. But also, the source of the sugar is important. We want to be consuming sugars as whole foods. So I just don't think you can really compare a grape, for example, to a piece of Haribo.
Yeah.
You know, to a Haribo
that
sweet.
That was an extreme example.
So basically, obviously, the sugar that is locked into these whole foods tends to be released slower because the cells of the fruit, for example, need to be broken down in order to access the sugar and for it to be released into our bloodstream. Whereas with the Haribo, this process doesn't need to happen. So we get more of a sugar hit and more of a sugar high.
Yeah. And does that make you crave more, do you think, because you're getting that high?
It depends how you probably take the high.
Yeah.
For me, I think I've gone beyond that stage, really. And I think more so of the crash afterwards. And it kind of makes me feel sick.
Yeah. So I've done some possibly pseudoscience research. And they say that gut health starts in the mouth. Mercury fillings, fluoride toothpaste, alcohol mouthwashes, and your whole mouth microbiome. Is there any real research behind this, or is this Facebook science?
Well, for me, like as a microbiologist and now a nutritionist, I would definitely say that the journey really starts from birth. The way that we enter this world, and which results in the inoculation of these microbes and the establishment of our microbiome and our microorganism communities. So I really think it is the birthing process that really sets us up for this lifetime of food intake and establishes these colonies. So obviously when we are born, it's either natural or cesarean. We know from the research that those born that via the vagina get most of their bacteria from their mother, whereas those born via cesarean get most of their gut bacteria from the hospital. Obviously, this develops over time, which we'll talk about later. But it's kind of really the approach of what came first, the chicken or the egg, our microbiome or us?
Yeah, of course, yeah, because if it started when you were in the womb, your microbiome did come first. Yeah, that is a day. So I'm a fan of Tim Spector, and he does the twin studies that show even if you've got the same DNA, your microbiome is very different. Is that true? Is that the case? It's just a totally individual, like you said before, one person's diet doesn't suit another.
Well, I think this kind of goes on to the nature-nurture debate, really. Our DNA only has so much control over our health. We're all starting to become very aware of this now. We actually have a lot more control than we think over our health. I've been reading a lot of books on this recently, and as a nutritionist, obviously, diet is so, so important to the health of the gut microbiome in particular, which results in our own health. But there's so many other factors as well that can affect the development of the gut microbiome. We know that medication, I spoke about that before, antibiotics, but also I attended a gut health conference day recently, and they were speaking about a few studies. There's a study that's been done on Irish travellers, and they showed that the location correlates with the composition of the gut microbiome and the lifestyle of the travellers, whether they have exposure to animals as well. So our furry
friends. Yeah, I've heard
that.
If you've got a dog and get your kids to eat dirt, that they're going to be healthier.
Yeah, well,
than being fully sanitised.
But that can also swing the other way, though, because later on we'll go to talk about, obviously, the gut-brain axis. We all know that animals help reduce anxiety, so it could be correlated that way.
Oh, right. So without going down the rabbit hole of bona fide gut conditions, it seems that a lot of people have been laying the blame at hundreds of autoimmune and various other undiagnosed conditions at the door of a leaky gut. What is a leaky gut, and whether leaking in your gut does in fact cause autoimmune diseases, and what should we be worried about? This does everybody's gut leak to a certain extent? I'm not entirely sure.
So leaky gut is a proposed condition some practitioners claim causes long-term conditions, including chronic fatigue syndrome and multiple sclerosis.
Yeah.
So people who are for this claim that many symptoms and conditions are caused by the immune system reacting to the substances absorbed in the blood via a leaky bowel. Whilst there is some evidence to suggest some conditions and medications can cause a leaky gut, there is little evidence that it actually can cause widespread problems.
Right.
And very, very little evidence for the treatments as well. So we just have to be aware where there is evidence and where there isn't, really.
Yeah, I think having media, social media, sometimes it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? There's some great information out there, but there's some other biohacking information. It's like, if you eat this or you don't eat this, you're going to cure yourself. Not always the case then. Yeah, as we touched on before, a particular fascination of mine is the gut-brain axis. That tending to your gut health can help with anxiety and depression. We all know that when we're anxious, our gut's going to overdrive. But can you explain the gut-brain axis and clarify the science regarding the anxiety, depression and the gut? I know there's been SMILES trials done about changing your diet and how it improves your mood. Is there truth in that?
So obviously we all know, well, we've probably all heard about the gut-brain axis now, or we've experienced it ourselves. It helps to really explain why some people get a dodgy tummy when they're anxious.
Yeah.
So the brain...
Nervous belly, yeah. I call it.
Is your tummy going now?
Yeah.
So the brain directly affects the stomach and the intestines. We all know that the thought of eating results in the release of stomach juices. This prepares our stomach for the incoming foods. The connection obviously goes both ways. A troubled intestine sends signals to the brain as well. A troubled brain sends signals to the guts. So a person's intestinal distress can be caused by anxiety, stress, or depression. And also, I've seen that there's been studies done on patients in psychiatric institutes where they have improved diet and they found an improvement in the mental health of the patients.
Wow.
But obviously there's a lot more research that needs to be done in that area. But it just proves that there is that brain-gut connection there, really.
That's amazing. And like you say, you couldn't have a one-size-fits-all for that kind of thing either.
Yeah, exactly.
Chocolate and wine might help me. It might not be good for someone else. It seems that there's so much information these days that we tend to find it difficult to actually make a judgment call. We're constantly being told what to do. Read this book, do this, follow that diet and do that. You'd think as adults we'd be able to realise that food with ingredients is not really a whole food. People would much rather be told, here's a prepackaged item, this is good for you. Does it boil down to just basic diversity of real foods that will keep your microbiome in optimal condition? Or would you say we also need to look at other things like of our lifestyle, junk food, exercise, stress, the whole? Is it to be looked at as a whole, or is it just diet that will help our microbiome?
Obviously, we're starting to become aware of how important diet is, not only on these conditions, but lots and lots of other conditions. And we can actually take so much control back regarding our risk for disease. But obviously, regarding this specific question, we touched on the gut-brain axis just before and its importance for individuals to manage their stress in order to maintain that good gut feeling and good gut health. It's also emerging now that there is an importance of exercise for gut health. Studies suggest, in fact, that it can enhance the number of beneficial species, enrich microflora diversity, and improve the development of commensal bacteria, thus improving the health of the host, the health of ourselves, obviously.
Really, just through exercise, and I suppose getting out there in the fresh air is probably double beneficial on
exactly.
top of that.
So manage stress and exercise as well, I would suggest.
I think maybe in today's world, we're getting more stressed. We're getting told to manage our stress better, but it's like the two are fighting against each other constantly.
Yes.
I mean, it's not, we've not suddenly tipped the other way and we're like, right, wow, I'm meditating six times a week. That hasn't happened. Even now with the working from home thing, I think people are working longer and harder and not the other way about. Hopefully the scales will tip at some point in the future when we get to learn more. Right, okay, one last question, I promise. Any particular diet and or lifestyle tips that we should be following towards optimal gut health? What is your top tips?
Okay, so I've kind of come up with 5 tips that I think are really important.
They'll be easy to remember, yeah. I'm hoping.
So first of all, obviously I've touched on this before, we all need to be eating more fibre. I think the average UK intake, I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, is 18 grams per day, and we really need to be hitting 30 grams per day. It is really hard to hit these 30 grams, but we just need to be aware of what foods are high fibre foods and just try our best to include them in our diet. Tip number 2 is to eat a diverse array of plant foods. We've probably more recently heard of the term hitting your plant points.
So how many plant points should I be hitting?
30 a week.
30 a week, yes. Right. And that's a different vegetable. Mm. That's like a little game, isn't it? That's definitely a target to hit.
I would say I definitely hit that, but I don't think I'm your average person.
And plus it's your job.
Yeah.
I reckon my guesstimate is people do between 5 and 10 at the very most.
A week?
Yeah. Of different foods.
Different
vegetables. Plants.
Yeah, different fruits and vegetables.
Right, straight into the market. It's me. I'm under pressure now for the old 30.
Tip number 3 is obviously to manage stress. Mm. I mean, we can all manage stress in different ways. We can try and take up yoga. We can try and meditate. It might even be just incorporating some self-care or reading a book. If you are overworking, just cutting back on the work and trying to just be more productive with your working hours. Because if you are taking some time for you, I don't know if you find this as well, when you come back from a lovely holiday, you're more productive at work. So
absolutely, yeah, having that time off, yeah.
Just reducing stress where you can and managing it.
Even if you're just sitting staring into space.
Yeah.
That's good for you. We do very little of that. We're always on the go, aren't we? We're always doing something. We've always got a list of things to do.
100%. Tip number 4 is to really get out there and live a natural life. Obviously now more of us are living in more built-up areas. And it's just really about going back to our roots, immersing ourselves in nature, engulfing ourselves in a world full of microorganisms and bacteria that are natural, and hopefully some of those microorganisms will start to establish good gut colonization for us,
right,
and, you know, aid in our gut health.
Get out there, start rolling in the dirt.
Exactly.
Well, they do. I mean, I hear more and more about getting into nature. More and more, so hopefully that'll encourage. I mean, we're quite lucky here that we have got quite an outside culture, and the weather's getting better. We can get out there, get on our bikes or whatever. But yeah, definitely, I agree with that.
So my 5th and final tip is obviously do what is best for your body. As nutritionists, yet again, we always push that there is no one size fits all approach. Obviously, we talked about the gluten-free diet. For me, that is something that I personally need to do, because obviously I have an intolerance to gluten. But for example, you might not have that intolerance or that allergy, so you don't need to do that. For me, I get issues when I drink wine, probably because of the sulfates. But you said you're a wine lover.
Absolutely, wine lover.
And that doesn't affect
you. Yeah, and I don't think for me saying, oh, I'm going to go gluten-free, it's not going to make me any healthier.
No, exactly. So you just have to do really what's best for your body, listen to your body, eat in tune with your body, and just, you know, don't do any unnecessary crazy diets that your body does not need.
Oh yeah, don't go to extremes then.
Exactly.
Right, so fibre, diversity, stress, nature, and what's best for you.
Yes,
100%. That is absolutely brilliant. Right, thank you so much, Jessica, for lending us your knowledge today. If anyone wishes to visit Jessica in her brand new clinic at Humankind Nutrition, I'll be adding a link to the post. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me.
That concludes today's podcast. If you have any questions, please get in touch. You can find me on the gram at Get Jill Podcasts.